We said that since we are talking about, inshallah, the fatwa of the Supreme Leader of the Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Khamenei, in these sessions, the question that has been raised is whether he is qualified or not to, or for us to follow him. And we need to address this issue. We also pointed out that the reason why we're addressing this issue regarding this particular marja is not to say that the other marja are not qualified to be followed or anything along those lines. The other marja, alhamdulillah, there's plenty of people to speak up for them. And for the most part, or for many of them at least, there's not too much hearsay condemning them or putting them down. Others can take care of them. Since we are talking about Ayatollah Khamenei and the circumstances here in the West especially, but worldwide I think, online especially, you see that there's a lot of questions regarding this marja and whether or not he is qualified. So we wanted to talk a little about the qualifications of Ayatollah Khamenei. First, I'll talk about the condition of ijtihad in a'lamiyya. A little bit of background about Ayatollah Khamenei. He was born in 1939, which means that this year he turned 70. May Allah prolong his life in July. He's born in Mashhad to a religious family. His father is an alim, a scholar. He starts his education early on. I don't want to get into the non-Hawzawi education, but he has his secular education from the regular schools in Iran, in Mashhad, where he was living. When he began his Hawza studies, it took him 5.5 years to finish the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh. The standard time for studying the Muqaddamat in the Sutuh for an Iranian student that is not raised with the Arabic language is about 10 years. Ayatollah Khamenei finished all of Muqaddamat in Sutuh, and he was doing it while he was still studying his secular studies as well. Partially, the beginning of it was like that. He managed to finish all of that in 5.5 years. At the age of 18, he starts attending Bahthul Kharij. Bahthul Kharij, he starts it in Mashhad under a prominent figure that is very well known in Najaf. He studied in Najaf, Ayatollah Sayyid Muhammad Hadi, I believe. I'm not sure about the Muhammad, I have to check it again, but Sayyid Hadi Milani, which is originally from Mashhad, and he went back to Mashhad after finishing and after becoming a marja. And let me talk a little bit about Ayatollah Milani as well, because I don't know what picture you're getting. Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad was so pro Imam Khomeini and the revolution, at least at the beginning, that to support Imam Khomeini in the cause of the revolution, when Imam Khomeini became a marja, the Risala of Imam Khomeini, it was not allowed to be distributed because of his activities against the regime in Iran. So what Ayatollah Milani did, just to make his name, just to make an image of Imam Khomeini, he would have the Risala of Imam Khomeini in order to distribute it and put the cover of his own, just the cover says it's Ayatollah Milani's, but it's the fatwa of Imam Khomeini, to be able to distribute the fatwa of Imam Khomeini. Some of the praise that has come from Ayatollah Milani about Imam Khomeini, it was interesting. I forget who it was that was saying this, but it was a reliable source. It's in a book. There's the quotation. He says, when I went from Qum to Mashhad to visit Ayatollah Milani, I wanted to tell him what was going on in Qum. And this is like a scholar, a very well-known figure in Qum and Mashhad. He says, I told him what was going on. I mentioned Imam Khomeini's name, and I thought I heard for a second there, Salawatullah alayh. Okay, when I mentioned Imam Khomeini's name. So I thought I heard it first, and I was like, okay, I don't think so. I went on talking. The second time I mentioned Imam Khomeini's name, again he said, Salawatullah alayh. I was like, okay. And I needed to make sure that I'm hearing right here. Because usually we don't say that for someone that's not ma'soom. It's very unusual to say that term for someone that is not ma'soom. And this individual says, I asked him, did I hear right? Did you say Salawatullah alayh? He said, yes. He said, at that time they didn't even used to call him Imam Khomeini. It was either Ayatollah Khomeini or Aghay Khomeini, whatever. So Ayatollah Milani said that the Ayatollah Khomeini that I know deserves to be called, or for it to be said regarding him, Salawatullah alayh. Anyhow, this mujtahid that according to Allama Tabatabai was the A'lam of his time, Allama Tabatabai considered Ayatollah Milani A'lam, Ayatollah Khamenei started studying under him in Mashhad. And it's important, the reason why I emphasized on the personality of Ayatollah Milani is for us to know who he has studied under. He wasn't in Najaf, but one of the prominent figures that Allama Tabatabai, who studied in Najaf, considers this individual, Ayatollah Milani, as A'lam of his time, most knowledgeable of his time. So he started his studies there, but then he went to Najaf for a while. He wanted to settle in Najaf and continue his studies in Najaf. His father disagreed with that and told him that he has to go back to Mashhad, or at least not be in Najaf. This part of the story is very similar to Ayatollah Bahjat's. I don't know if you've heard him. When he was attending Ayatollah or Allama Qadhi Tabatabai's classes in Arfan, his father told him not to attend because he was told, his father was told that, this guy, Allama Qadhi Tabatabai, is a Sufi and he's a deviant teacher, this and that. So his father banned him, and because of that he stopped going. So Ayatollah Khamenei, he listened to his father and he went back. He didn't go to study in Najaf, but he went to Qum. For 7 years straight he was in Qum studying under the teachers their name follows: Ayatollah Burujerdi, which was the Marja'ul Aam at that time, someone that had studied in Najaf, a very prominent figure that had moved to Qum, the teacher of many of the current Maraja and Qum was Ayatollah Burujerdi. Of course, Imam Khomeini did not study much under him. Or even when he did, he didn't. That wasn't his real teacher, because he had already finished his studies under Ayatollah Hari. Anyhow, Ayatollah Burujerdi was one of his teachers. Imam Khomeini, he studied under Imam Khomeini as well. The son of Ayatollah Hari, who set up the Hawza in Qum, Sheikh Murtada Hari, which was one of the top figures in Qum, a friend of Imam Khomeini, Ayatollah Khamenei has studied under him as well, and also under Allama Tabatabai he's studied a little while. How long, I don't know the exact details of that. But for 7 years he was in Qum and he studied under these individuals. Then he went back to Mashhad. For 4 years he studied Kharij under Ayatollah Milani again. So after his sutuh, he has studied 11 years under teachers, Bahthul Kharij. Okay. Speaking to some of those who knew Ayatollah Khamenei in Iran. When the issue of the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei came up, they said, "We testify that he was a mujtahid not now, but in 1337, that's in the Iranian calendar, 1337, that's the first year that he started his Bahthul Kharij. He was teaching also. He had classes, he was teaching makasas, some of the advanced classes in the Hawza, he was teaching that. They testified, these are scholars, that in 1337 he was a mujtahid, not now. This is, I think, 5 years, yes, 5 years before the movement of Imam Khomeini started. This is important. Some people say, oh, he's always been in politics, and yes, he's been active, but 5 years before the actual movement started by Imam Khomeini, he was a mujtahid, according to that testimony. And this is, it's not unusual for someone, and that time he was 19, apparently, if you do the calculations. It's not unusual. Shaheed Assad was a mujtahid before he was baligh, actually, according to the testimony of Ayatollah Khoui. If I remember correctly, the date of that goes back to before Shaheed Assad was even baligh, or maybe a little after it, but the talk about his ijtihad is about before he was even baligh. So the ijtihad that he has is testified by scholars to be 5 years before the movement of Imam Khomeini began. And when the movement of Imam Khomeini began, he was part of it, he was politically active, but he also was involved with his studies, as we said. Up till 1347, he was actively participating in Bahthul Kharij of Ayatollah Milani in Mashhad. After that, apparently he gets involved more in his political and social activities. And at that point, I believe he would be, like, after 11 years, the teachers that are more familiar with Bahthul Kharij and have given advice on how much to attend Bahthul Kharij and where the benefits are going to be. They say within 2 or 3 years you should be gaining the ijtihad, if it takes that long. Then afterwards, for a little while, for a few years, you need to go to see what you can benefit from the teachers. After that, it's your own work. So after 11 years of attending Bahthul Kharij, Ayatollah Khamenei does not attend Bahthul Kharij any longer, at least on a continuous basis. And he does his own research, he does his own studies, and he's actively involved in the revolution. He holds classes of tafsir in Tehran and in other cities of Iran, in Mashhad. And he gets involved with, you know, he's exiled and a lot of things happen. He's sometimes imprisoned during the previous regime. The question that comes up is that, okay, if even if the individual was mujtahid, but all these years of staying away from studies. First of all, Ayatollah Khamenei has never stayed away from studies. This testimony comes from, I think, one of I think it was either Ayatollah Mishkini, I think it was Ayatollah Mishkini or Ayatollah Jannati, one of these figures. When Ayatollah Khamenei was a president in the beginning of, after the revolution succeeded, a few years after that, he was president for 2 terms. He served 2 terms before he became the supreme leader. During that time, Ayatollah Mishkini, I think it is, said that, I saw one of the sons of Ayatollah Khamenei and asked him, "What are you studying?" He said, "Shara'i', one of the books of fiqh." He said, "Who's teaching you?" He said, "My father is teaching me." And Ayatollah Mishkini was amazed. He said, for an individual with all these responsibilities to be able to manage to fit that in the schedule and teach that class, it is a very great accomplishment. He never stopped his studies. He has stated this himself too, that I always tried to keep an hour or two in my schedule open for studies. You can't keep away from them. And after he became the supreme leader, a little while after that, because he was requested a lot to start Bahthul Kharij, he started Bahthul Kharij and he's teaching. Currently you can find some of his the material that he has taught on his site, of course, in the Farsi language. I'm sure it exists. In Arabic, I don't know, I don't think so. In English, definitely it does not exist. But in Farsi, it's there, and of course, that's not all of what he has taught. That's only part of it. I don't know why they haven't updated that. How can someone focus on their studies and do the work, all these other activities as well? There's a few points to keep in mind. First of all, usually the maraja that we are following, the fatawa that we have from them are not their fatawa when they are 60 years old. The fatawa that you have from them are usually from earlier on in their studies. Maybe around when they're like 20-something, 30-something, the first few years after their ijtihad, they do the ijtihad and taharat and salat and all those things, which Ayatollah Khamenei has his own hashiya, his commentary on one of the fiqh books, most probably Urwa, that's what was common to have the commentary on, in other words, the side notes where the fatawa differ, his fatawa differ. He has had that, and he's had his own views in usul, in rijal, that many scholars are not very strong in. I can, if it would have been appropriate, I would have named some scholars that are not very strong in rijal, but Ayatollah Khamenei particularly is very strong in rijal. He's done that very well. In usul, he's very strong. In fiqh, the understanding is very strong. And to compare people by saying that this person has spent this many years in the Hawza, the other person has spent less years in the Hawza, that's not a good comparison. Because if you go to Qum and go to Faydiyah, the main school there, the traditional, the old school, towards the time of Maghrib, you'll start seeing some pretty old men sitting there that they've spent all their life in the Hawza, but they haven't gained anything. And in Bahthul Kharij, if you attend, there's many people that are attending, but I can testify and be responsible for it on the Day of Judgment, that the majority of people are not benefiting from the teacher the way they should have benefited. It's not about the number of years, it's about the talent of the individual, how talented he is. And also about the amount of work that he puts while he's studying and continuing that, and whether he teaches or not, which Ayatollah Khamenei has taught at least, at the very least, once the main subjects in Sutuh as well, before he was considered a marja and people started following him, which was then when he started the Bahthul Kharij. So, no doubt, the ijtihad... Oh, one last point regarding the ijtihad for those, because unfortunately, as some of the scholars were saying, this is from Ayatollah Misbah, he said, when we read history, we read certain things that we don't, it doesn't make sense to us. Like, how did this happen? Then when you experience it, you start realizing, oh my God, you know, this is actually happening. One of the things we read in history, which is difficult to understand, is that they say when they assassinated Amir al-Mu'mineen in the masjid, when the news got to Sham, they said, oh, Ali prayed? Ali used to pray? That's how much propaganda was against that individual, Amir al-Mu'mineen, salamullah alayh, that people thought he's not even Muslim, he's not even praying. Unfortunately, these days, there's so much accusations and so much false information that forget about a'lamiyya, people are questioning ijtihad and things like that, and it's very, you know, start to feel like how it was back in those days when Amir al-Mu'mineen was assassinated like that. Regarding ijtihad, we have one of the strongest figure in our Shia or the history of our Shia jurisprudence and fiqh, testifying to the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei for sure. That individual, all of what I said, put that aside, the individual that I'm mentioning is an individual who has his usul has been printed, four or five different students have written his usul. He has written an usul himself, which is rare in the recent history for a faqih and an usuli to write his own usul, okay, and not his students just write down what he has said in class. His fiqh is a very strong fiqh, and he has ijtihad from numerous scholars, and that individual is the late Imam Ruhullah al-Khumayni, rahmatullah alayh. He has testified to the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei when he has said that in a few, at least, the very least, a few instances where he was asked what's going to happen after you, who is going to rule, he has said Ayatollah Khamenei is qualified to rule. The main qualification that Imam Khomeini had in mind for ruling, other than the other, you know, the aspects of the personality and things, is the concept of ijtihad. At the very least, that Imam Khomeini has testified in this statement, and he has said a few times, he has mentioned this a few times to different individuals. So the ijtihad of Ayatollah Khamenei is no doubt established, comparing him to the scholars that are considered of those who may be a'lam. I could testify by comparing the works of Ayatollah Khamenei, which, as I said, they're available and one can see them for those who are they know fiqh and usul and they can judge. If you compare that to some of the others that are, whether in Qum or Najaf, that have Bahthul Kharij and they're discussing those same issues, if you look at the understanding of usul in those words, Rijal that is involved, their understanding of hadith, the ahadith that are brought, how they are put together and all of that, it is definitely, I don't want to make a judgment here and say who is A'lam, or I'm just trying to clarify the doubts. It is most definitely comparable, and at the very least, above many of the others, which I won't mention names, clearly above many of the others that are considered A'lam, and they have many followers, and nobody is questioning their ijtihad or A'lamiyya. This is the aspect of ijtihad and the knowledge, the a'lamiyya of Ayatollah Khamenei. The aspect of idala is the like of me to talk about the idala of Ayatollah Khamenei is something that is not justice. Okay, if I went to talk about the idala, to tell you that he is adil, somebody would have to establish my idala if I want to talk about Ayatollah Khamenei. But this individual is undoubtedly one of the most just, one of the most pure scholars that we have, that has full control of his nafs. Okay, not just a normal idala. Not just a normal idala. It is far beyond just a regular idala of not committing sins. We don't hear too much of the personal life of Ayatollah Khamenei, how he lives his life right now. Okay. Background about his childhood, he was raised in a poor family. They had a very small house with one room in, like, other than the main hall of the room, there's only one room there in a dark basement. They didn't have anything else. 70 square meters is the house. And later on it was expanded a bit, they had three rooms with the family that his father had. They only had three rooms. He grew up and he had his own family. He has some children. I have seen his sons personally in Qum, they walk around. Comparing, just before anything else, if you just compare the children of Ayatollah Khamenei compared to others, I don't want to mention names again. First, let's just compare the amount of wealth and power that is easily accessible by Ayatollah Khamenei and his family members. The wealth that Iran has, okay, all of the oil fields, that's all under the government. All of the gas, that's all under the government. The wealth that Iran has, it's all to a great extent, okay, whatever is governmental, which there's a lot there, is easily accessible by Ayatollah Khamenei and his children and his whole family. If anyone wanted to be corrupt, if they wanted to access any of that, like the children of some others, which you hear on the news these days, and I don't want to mention names, they can easily have access to all of that. and get involved in all kinds of corruption. But when you look at these, the children, before I even get to Ayatul Khamen, to see what type of a figure their father is, that all of them are the same. When they wanted to go, I know the father-in-law of one of the sons, at least, of Ayatollah Khamenei. It's an individual called Ayatollah Khushfaqt. It's one of the students of Allama Tabatabai and Irfan. When they wanted to go and find or introduce their son to ask for the hand of the daughter of this particular scholar, that wasn't the first one they went to. When they would go to people and ask, they wouldn't say who this individual is. They would go on behalf of them and say, there's a talaba, not Ayatollah Khamenei himself, some people on his, there's a talaba that wants to come, a talaba, a Hawza student, a regular Hawza student that wants to come and ask for your daughter's hand. Are we allowed to come and speak? A regular Hawza student. A lot of people rejected because of that. They didn't know it was Ayatollah Khamenei's son. If they would know, they would definitely say, please, you know, more than welcome. They just said, a regular talaba, are we? Said, no. But Ayatollah Khushfaqt said, yes, you're welcome, you can come, and they came. And this is the type of approach that they have. When you see them on the streets in Qum, okay, there's no bodyguard or any fancy car or anything like that. They're just walking on the streets. You can, a lot of people don't know who they are, but those who do know, like myself, you know who they are. This is how they live their lives. One of my teachers has visited the house of one of Ayatollah Khamenei's sons, and it's, you know, very, very, very regular, if not below standard, living standards in Iran, that type of a life that they have. Below standards is definitely below the normal standard, but as a talaba, it's around, you know, the standard of how a Hawza student lives their life, or his life. That's how they live. Those who've had contact with Ayatollah Khamenei himself in his house, this is, I think, said by Aga Haddad Adil or Aga Velayati, which I've personally seen that individual, Haddad Adil, and he's a very honest and sincere and simple person, and simple in the sense that, you know, it's easy to talk to. He doesn't like hold himself up high, although he was the parliament speaker at one point. Anyhow, he says that, either him or Ayy Velayati, they said that when Ayatollah Khamenei moved to go to his to the house where he's staying at right now, they wanted to move, obviously, the equipment, whatever he had in his home. He said, when we went to the new house, Ayatollah Khamenei asked, we moved everything. We thought everything was finished. We went to the house and Ayatollah Khamenei said, what happened to my stove? Why didn't you bring my stove? And he said, we didn't see any stove. He started describing what it looked like. And he said, when he described it, I remembered that there was a piece of junk that we thought it's to throw away, useless material that is not really usable for any purpose. We thought that, you know, just put it aside to throw it away. And Ayatollah Khamenei was saying, that is my stove. Those who've gone over his house to for official sessions to talk about government issues, about what's going on in the society, a number of them have had this experience that when they had the meeting with him, the time of food, lunch, dinner, whatever it was, came, and the individual is obviously, because he's there on a governmental affair, he's talking about things that are related to issues regarding the country. They would provide and prepare some food, a decent food, not like too low in standards, nothing special either, just decent food, some little bit of chicken and rice. But there would be only enough for two people. Ayatollah Khamenei's son would come in, okay, or he would be there. Sometimes he would even be there, like during that session, he would be there. When the time for food would come, Ayatollah Khamenei would tell him, you know, you have to go back in the house and eat from the food in the house, which is not the same as the food that is over there, prepared over there. Those who visited the house have had some experiences which are not really believable. What I'm saying, many people are going to probably say, oh, this is, you know, this is fairy tales. You're talking about, I mean, you know, whoever wants to accept it, they can accept it. They don't want to accept it, that's fine. But this is a reality. those who visited and the friends of the sons of Ayatollah Khamenei that have gone there, what they've gotten for food wasn't really something that got rid of their hunger and filled them up, yogurt and bread and things like that. Anyhow, so he would tell the son, not like, oh, he's here to order some more food, bring some food for him too, there's three of us. No, you're not here for government issues, you don't have to be here, so for the food you have to leave, you have to go home and have the food at home. When you look at the decisions that this man has made throughout the years that he's been the supreme leader, and even before then as the president, without a shadow of a doubt, if this man wanted to be or have the slightest bit of corruption in him, the slightest bit of hawa'un nafs, okay, the desires to stop him from making the right decisions, many of the decisions that have caused him to be targeted by so many individuals and his reputation be destroyed, he wouldn't have made those decisions. By just being in the presence of this man and praying behind him, listening to him, following, unfortunately, maybe many of you don't speak Farsi or don't understand Farsi, but if you follow even the translation, I think, and look at the way he has guided this country in the Islamic direction throughout these years, one can very clearly testify that this man is no doubt one of the most just and adil scholars that would not, for any reason, for his children, for his family, for his personal benefit, for any party's benefit, okay, for anything other than Allah, change his view and make a decision to go against what Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has said because of something like that. We ask Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to enable us to see the truth and to accept the truth and to guide us in the cases where there's fitna and there's our views could easily be blurred by propaganda, that he shows us what the truth is, inshallah, and that we are able and manage to accept that, inshallah.